Let me introduce you to inspiring entrepreneurs. Hi there, my name is Ben Gothard. My mission is to interview incredible entrepreneurs who are changing the world and present their stories to you, unscripted and unedited. From billionaires to Forbes 30 Under 30 recipients to New York Times best-selling authors and much, much more, these people are living proof that nothing is impossible. Join me on this journey to learn from their experiences and become the person you're meant to be. Welcome to the Project Egg Show, every morning at 8 a.m. Central. Eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Project Egg Show. I'm your host, Ben Gothard, and today we have the honor of speaking with Brett Schwartz, president of Capital Gains Tax Solutions. Now, Brett and I were chatting a little bit before the episode went live, and I am so incredibly excited to get on air a sneak peek into Brett's mindset on taking massive action and just totally crushing it in business and in life. So that's a little sneak peek for what's to come, plus a lot of other really fun stuff. So make sure you stick around to the very end. Without any further ado, Brett, welcome to the show.
Ben, my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. I am so glad that you could carve out the time to be on the show today. So I want to know, what is your story?
Yes, thanks for asking, Ben. So originally from Mission, San Jose, and I grew up on the job site with my dad building custom homes and learning the sticks and bricks behind commercial real estate and also residential real estate and how to be an entrepreneur, how to have your own business and to have employees and such. I saw my dad model that. You know, went on to school and studied business, Bible and theology, and a minor in counseling psychology, and also played some college hoops while I was in college. But really, I took a passion to commercial real estate my junior year, and I took an internship at Marcus & Millichap, and I learned how to help people buy and sell commercial real estate, particularly multifamily apartments in Northern California. And I have never looked back since then. I've focused on that. But along that journey was trying to figure out ways to add value and solve challenges for clients, which led into multiple tax deferral strategies, which is what helped launch the company Capital Gains Tax Solutions. So that's kind of the business journey. The personal journey has to do with, I've been married now for 10 years. We have five kids under the age of 9, 4 girls and a boy. And so we are full-time parents and we live here in Sacramento, California.
That's awesome. So I want to talk a little bit about your college days. You mentioned how, I believe you said you were studying some theology and psychology. Mm-hmm. Why those two things? Where did that interest come from?
You know, when it started out, it was just business coming out of high school playing sports. I just thought business would be a good thing to study. But I actually got a scholarship to a university called William Jessup University. And at the time, they required a double major. And, you know, I'm a Christian. I grew up studying the Bible, but, you know, thought I knew a little bit about it. But when I dove into the classes, it just really expanded my knowledge and understanding of the Bible. And so it was kind of natural in that I'm already a believer, but at the same time, it was required. And so it was a double major. So business and then a double major in Bible and theology, and then a minor in counseling psychology. So yeah, but it was amazing because it ended up being more than I thought it would be. More than just business. It was spiritual. So it was great.
And what were some of the big advances in your own thinking and your own philosophy in those areas?
Yeah, good question. So I guess just the context and the depth and the history of of what the, you know, the foundation of literacy is, which is the Bible, and just learning how to grow and be closer to God the best way you can. And part of that is knowledge and understanding scripture and context and what was happening during the time and what, you know, there's so much out there about the Bible, but until you read it and understand it and study it, it can be difficult to understand, I guess, at times. So yeah, just spiritual growth, you know, growing my character, right? Along those lines, learning to work harder on myself than I did on just schoolwork, right? Learning to be a better leader, to be a better teammate at the time in college, at the time just dating my who's now my wife, but being a better, you know, friend, boyfriend to her. So those type of things that are beyond just, you know, go get a degree in business and make money. So that's probably the biggest thing.
So it sounds like you kind of got intrigued by personal development. I mean, you're talking about character and your beliefs and your leadership capabilities. Is that how you saw it? Or it was just theology at the time that you're like, oh, this is cool.
You know, I think they're both hand in hand, you know, because the Bible taught that. And yet I think, you know, our traditional school system, unfortunately, doesn't focus on those types of things, such as, you know, finance and such as, you know, handling your money, such as growing as a leader, especially the spiritual part about it, too. It's unfortunately, it's difficult to integrate that. And I'm a public school kid. We had great schools and I love them, you know, really good teachers. But yeah, I would say kind of discovered that leadership part and the personal development, which is part of what the Bible has always said to you know, grow your character and do the right thing, right? So
how is your personal development routine or your set of behaviors or the way you go about doing it or developing yourself changed over time?
Sure. Yeah. The biggest thing is just learning from others, right? So I like to say the virtual mentors and then the book mentors. I would say it's changed in that the way I consume the information, you know, more, it's more mobile now, right? Podcasts, webinars, versus just reading the books at the time when I was in college. And so it's we're really kind of just spoiled, if you think about it, of how much knowledge and opportunity to be inspired by so many great leaders now with the speed of information. So I would say, you know, podcast, reading. I go to a global leadership conference every year. I think it's one of the biggest in the world. They have it, you know, streamed across the whole world. And that's amazing. And so I like to say the ideas plus inspiration, wherever I can find it, along with, you know, a group. I have a close group of men that mentor me and build into me. And in particular, we study the Bible, but it's also leadership and accountability and encouragement. And that has helped me grow tremendously versus just going on your own. I think when you try to go on your own, it can be tough. So, you know, as an entrepreneur kind of by nature, I think I tend to be more of the solo, you know, but when I've learned to kind of grow the team and depend and encourage others to help me out, that has helped me grow a lot.
In that group with your mentors, what have been some of the biggest lessons that you've learned from that environment?
Wow. What to do and what not to do. And there's about 20 guys, and they're all older than me in different generations. I was one of the younger guys. I actually joined about a year after I graduated from college. And the idea was, instead of focusing on just friendships, and I had fellowship and friendships and such, that's which are great, I really sought out mentors who could teach me about life and how to be a parent and how to, you know, own a business. I mean, there was attorneys, there was doctors, there was psychologists. I mean, just a real mix of individuals. And so, yeah, and just absorbing and just trying to actually apply the knowledge they're telling you about. And also, you know, the checks and balances to say, hey, watch out for these kind of things. And that helped me grow tremendously. Hopefully that answered the question.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk a little bit about the psychology aspect also. What did you learn there? What were some of the biggest takeaways? And how has that actually impacted your life moving forward?
Yeah, so I got a minor in counseling psychology. Probably the number one theme that really opened my mind and I guess my wisdom of psychology is the moment you think you're least vulnerable is the moment you could be most vulnerable. And so it's the idea of pride and or just resting on your past, you know, and we're one decision away from losing our integrity and our credibility and our, what we've built up as individuals for our family and our colleagues and our clients that we serve. And so, just to realize that you gotta be careful. And it's, I think it's a saying I've also learned along those lines. I think it's Rory Vaden, I think his name is, and he wrote a book about Take the Stairs. And it's the idea that integrity is never owned. It's only rented, and the rent is due every day. So regardless if for, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, we've done things, our integrity can be lost in one moment of a poor decision. So just understanding the way the brain, I guess the way the brain works, our emotions work, and being wise to how vulnerable we can be when we think we're least vulnerable.
That is a fascinating concept of being the most vulnerable when you think you're the least vulnerable. So if we have such a blind spot, how do you become more aware, increase your level of consciousness to be able to see that?
I think that's for the team and why we need each other, right? And so as a part of that, whether it's your spouse, I think that's one of the reasons God gave us the gift of marriage is for someone who's generally speaking, they can be the opposite and to help you grow more in the parts where you're weaker at, and or to encourage you for those blind spots. So I think for me, it's having those mentors and then being vulnerable and honest and open and a place where I know I can have prayer and support and encouragement and accountability. I like to call it an encouraging accountability. That's really changed my life. I think growing up as a Christian in the church, you know, we always had people who maybe told us the rules to do, but oftentimes it wasn't in an encouraging, loving way. And it can kind of pull people away from, I guess, religion in general. But when it's encouraging accountability, I think that's the part where it really is powerful.
Wow. So you were going on this path of business with theology, with psychology, getting all these lessons, learning a lot, and then the whole real estate thing kind of popped up and showed up in your life. Why was that so attractive to you? Why did that stand out?
Yeah. So growing up as a part of my story is being competitive in an environment that I love, I guess, change. You know, I kind of thrive in being able to be adaptable and to move with things. And I, you know, wasn't the best in school, you know, A's and B's and some C's, and it wasn't that enthusiastic about it. But when I took an internship and saw that commercial real estate offered not only the aspect of working with people, which is probably my favorite part and learning their story, but also the underwriting and the finance part of my brain and the mathematics about it, the strategy behind about selling and buying and how to add value to properties. And then the competitiveness to see what it takes, because it's 100% commission sink or swim business where you go in and it's very difficult to break in into the brokerage world and win business. So I thrive on challenge and opportunity for that. So I just fell in love with the business and a lot of people, you know, at the time it was tough too, by the way. I graduated in 07, May of 07, and it was just getting going in my career when the 2008 crash kind of hit. And everyone said, go get a real job. What are you doing? And I wasn't really making really any money. It was really tough. But I said, you know, I love the business. I have great mentors. I'm learning a ton. And they kept telling me, if you can win in this business or make it work in this next couple of years in this environment, you can set yourself up for a great career. So I would just say the passion for the business. And then again, learning people's stories, which was the best part about it, all of it.
I love that. And I love the intersection of finance and people because I actually have a finance degree from college. And I mean, I love people. Like one of the greatest gifts of being able to do this show is that I get to learn from a lot of really cool, interesting people like yourself. So I love that. I love that intersection. What have been some of your discoveries as far as that intersection of finance and people? Like, what are some of the biggest takeaways that you've learned from being in those two fields?
That one can serve the other. You know, money is a tool, and especially if you can use it in a way that can invest in something that gives you back time and energy, and which to me, hands down, is commercial real estate investing, and especially if it can be passive. And with that, the book Start With Why is a really inspiring book by Simon Sinek. And you have to say, why do you want to make money, or why do you want to invest? And what does that help you to serve you to do? So for some of the things, for example, with the strategy that we use, it's we're able to give back time and energy to people that otherwise would have to work for another 10 or 15 years because they would have to net a certain number before, and then after they sell, pay the tax. Whereas ours, we're going to defer the tax and give them back all of that time. So just the ability to help people solve their goals right where they're at, whether it be a family who has young kids and they want to spend more time with their kids, whether it be somebody who wants to retire and have income that comes in. All of those things affect our everyday lives. And if we can give more of that with our clients, friends, and family, then we free them to have to do the important things in life.
Cool. So let's talk about this massive. Cool. So let's talk about this massive action. I want to know what you're thinking about that, what you think about massive action. We talked a little bit before about, we're going to blow the people's minds. So let's do it. Let's jump right into it.
Yeah. So let's talk about what's happening right now in the demographics, and then we'll talk about the massive action part of it. So right now, according to the American Bankers Association, Ben, there's about $17 trillion that will pass from one generation to the next in the next 20 years. And this is known as the baby boomer generation. And it's the largest wealth transfer in the history of the planet that we know of. In fact, every single day, there's about 10,000 baby boomers turning 65. And there's about 77 million in the US alone. So they're trying to transfer this wealth, but what's the challenge? What's the problem? Well, the problem is they're gonna get hammered by capital gains tax and depreciation recapture, the amount of 30 to 50% of their gain when they sell their high-end primary home, commercial real estate, business, artwork, collectibles, you name it. Any of their wealth that they transfer is going to get hit with 30 to 50% of their gain. And so they actually feel really trapped. Okay, they feel trapped and they're not sure what to do. And there are some alternatives and some deferral strategies out there that can solve some of these challenges. But we found that most of them only solve a part of it. For example, if you own commercial real estate, you can do what's called a 1031 exchange, where you can trade like-kind real estate for equal or greater like-kind real estate and defer the tax until you sell out. The challenge there is you also have to replace the debt, whatever debt you have on there, which creates a cycle of sell high and buy higher. And also you have these timelines that you have to contract underneath. And so with those challenges, people end up overpaying and they end up actually staying in this management role of the real estate or the liability. And they get stressed out and they get frustrated and they actually just want to be done with the toilets, the trash, the liability. And so how do they send it to the next generation? Well, they can sell and pay the tax, or they can just hold on forever and get the stepped up basis if they sell. But we have a unique solution in that we're going to allow them to defer the tax and actually get diversified into stocks, bonds, and mutual funds of their own choosing, and also be able to redeploy back into real estate. So it's a really elegant solution that that helps them accomplish that.
Cool. So where's the taking massive action part? It seems like we're talking a lot about finance, not as much about like taking massive action.
Yeah. So the action part is actually becoming educated in the strategies, you know, so, and encouraging either your professional advisors who may not know about these strategies to become educated. So And when you do that, you equip yourself with the tool to accomplish your goals, right? So, but until you do that, if you just stay in your lane and don't think outside of your lane, then you're kind of at a stalemate, right? Or the worst thing is we get calls afterwards, Ben, of people who've sold a business for $5 million and have paid $2 million in tax and say, oh my gosh, I wish I would have known about this. So the massive action is to make the plan right now. What is your plan for a passive income stream on the sale of your business or real estate or whatever asset you're building right now, and get that in place right now. Set it up, get your advisors to understand it, get everything in line so that when you actually go to sell, you're not caught off guard and you have it all in place so that you save that 30 to 50% tax.
Why is it important to you to help people with this?
To give them back what they want, I think, right? Which is the best way to understand it is the 2008 crisis when people didn't sell at the height, weren't diversified and got hammered and maybe lost, some of them lost everything, right? Instead, they could have sold, got out of debt. One part of the deferred sales stress strategy is the ability to actually be debt-free from whatever asset you're selling. So let's just say you own a business that's worth $10 million, but you have $5 million in debt. Well, if you can sell now and get debt-free of that and still be tax-deferred, you're taking risk off the table, which means you have less likely to get hit with the market turns. So I like to say taking risk off the table, getting a passive income stream where you're truly not dealing with employees, you're dealing with toilets, trash, and liability. And then there's the ability to give back. And so if we give the money to the government, it's gone forever. And both sides are going to waste it pretty quick. But if we can keep it in our families, in our estates, in our own communities, we can give more, and that helps people.
So that makes sense logically, but why do you care? Like, why do you specifically, why do you care? Like, I mean, you know, obviously, some level of finance. And so if you have this information, you could easily just use it for yourself and you're good to go. And then you don't have to worry about it anymore because you got it under wraps, right? So like, why share it with other people? Why do you care?
Yeah, that's the why behind personally why I do it. I have to go back to a few deal stories that were.
Hey, we're getting it's cutting out. It's pretty choppy for whatever reason. Can you try that again, please?
Yeah, sure. So the why behind
still choppy, still getting it. Maybe try turning off that mixer real quick, and let's see if that fixes it. This is the fun of being on air live, people.
How does it sound now?
Good.
Perfect.
Okay.
So rewind. So what is the why behind what I do personally? What do I enjoy most about it? It is helping people solve their challenges and be able to do what they want to do. And I'll just tell you about a deal we disclosed 2 weeks ago. So it's a gentleman, he's 68 years old. His name's Peter. He lives in Marin, California. He's a real estate broker by trade. He's driving 3 hours to Sacramento to have to manage an apartment complex. And this is in a rough part of the neighborhood, and he's collecting rents. And he feels trapped because he doesn't want to sell and move into another property and have to do more of that. Instead, he can sell and get out of it completely. And so his quote to me was, "Brett, I have so much time and energy to do what I want to do now instead of having to worry about this property up here. And I never knew I could do it this way. And you've given me what I wanted." So that's rewarding for me. So being able to help people have that freedom from that grip that they feel like they have to continue to own this business, or only if they sell will they, if they sell, they're going to get hammered by the tax, or they have to do a 1031 exchange. I just like the liberty part about it. I think it's the American in me. The part of me is doesn't want to help people pay the tax for the government and see it wasted away. So just the freedom and options for people to do what they want, when they want. We truly believe that they deserve a solution for that. And this solution provides that.
Cool. So as you're going about and you're building your business and you're learning about, you know, more about the finance side and the people side, and you're running your own business, what have you found to be some of the biggest failures that you've had along the way?
You know, as a young entrepreneur, I think my biggest one was basically not giving the client what they wanted, you know, and the story was, this client wanted me to work collaboratively with another broker on another deal. And instead of saying, yeah, let's make it work. What do you want? Understanding, you know, why they were asking that. I took it more of a like, oh, I'm not good enough, and had a little bit of pride versus, hey, no, he just wants to me to connect with this other good broker and work as a team. And so I basically said no to that. And it was probably my biggest mistake, because I lost the client, you know, and I lost the deal. And so just saying, hey, what do you want? Let's find a creative solution. It's not A or B. It could be C, D, E, or F, right? If we get together and spend some time brainstorming, we can make this work. And so instead of being so rigid, being a little more flexible, if that makes sense.
So in your personal life, what's it like having 5 kids?
Wow. You know, I call it 100% work, 100% joy, Ben. So especially when they're young, and it's kind of part of my personality. You know, I did 2 degrees and a minor, and I was on college basketball scholarship and internship when I was in college. And so my wife and I have been married for 10 years, and our oldest will be turning 9 coming up here in another month or so. And so she's the rock star. So it's nonstop. It's a lot of work, but it's rewarding. You know, I'd say marriage and family are the two of the best gifts that God gives us to have on this earth. And that's it's good, but it's also tiring. You know, I've never been so exhausted and stressed out about 6 months ago when the baby first arrived, kind of thing. So yeah, that's until you're in it. And by the way, ask me in a few years, I'll let you know when I've been able to digest all of it.
So from, it seems like 6 months to 9 years old, it's a pretty wide range of ages. How do you make sure that you're getting to spend the time that you want to spend with each one, and, you know, getting to do what they want to do, but then also being together as a family? Like, it seems like a pretty interesting thing to figure out.
Yeah. So that's the, by the way, that's more my personal why. So my personal why of why I want to be profitable in this business and help people is a part of it. But the personal why, honestly, is to be able to have an income stream that's through commercial real estate, passive income, so that I can spend time with my family, so that my wife can stay home full time with my kids and pour into them. So that's, and she's been able to do that so far. Yeah, I guess just being intentional, right? And being there. I try to you know, do the date nights and do the adventure outings and do as much as we can to focus on them. So again, ask me in a couple of years, I'll let you know, but I guess being intentional.
What do you see? 'Cause my dad is one of 5 siblings. Mm-hmm. So being the son and then the nephew of those 5, mm-hmm. I feel like I have the perspective from the other side, where I'm like on the tail end of that. How do you see each of them developing, like with their different personalities? Like, what have been some of the things you've learned seeing them grow and develop?
Yeah, great question. So they're all unique in their own way, right? And there's the firstborn who's the analytical extrovert, and the secondborn is the opposite, introvert, and she's as fiery as and stubborn as any of our kids. You know, it's gone so fast, and the years have flown by. It's amazing. I mean, the speed of life. Once you get out of college, it feels like, you know, you went from, let's say, 24 hours a day in high school, then it was like maybe 16 in college, and then you're in your career, it feels like 12-hour days, and then you're married with kid, and it kind of feels like 8-hour days. It's just so fast. So I don't know quite how to answer that question, except we're just trying to focus on the things that matter most, right? Their education, their spiritual walk, their health, teaching them about finance, you know, teaching them about how to love one another, right, and love their neighbor, all of those things that are so important to to have as kids and as parents. So I'm not sure if I'm answering the question, except for they're all different. And we're also trying to focus on their strengths too, Ben. I guess that's another way to put it. You know, not everyone's going to be a doctor or an attorney or someone in finance. They have different strengths. And one thing I wish I would have learned earlier in life was to really double down and invest in the strengths and, of course, manage the weaknesses, but don't try to be something maybe that you're not, right? And what are the gifts and talents you've been given, and how do we focus on that? So we are intentional about those things with them.
So I'm so excited for this next question, and I really hope that you're open to play ball here. But I think it would be so cool if you could give a message that your kids could come back and listen to it, you know, in like 20 years, almost like a hidden little time machine thing. Sure. What would that message be?
Wow. So it'd be Ava's 9, Evie's is 7, Emily's 6, Savannah's 3.5, and Strive is now 9 months old. My message to them would be to be all that God's created you to be, to not be afraid of what your emotions might tell you, to have a team of people who encourage you and love you and support you, to chase your dreams and persevere. You know, I think perseverance is one of the best strategies and values you can have. And of course that I love them and I'm proud of them and so fortunate to be their dad.
That's awesome. That is so, so cool.
And my wife, she gets all the credit. She's really the superhero. I mean, she's really the supermom. I'm the dad we're working as a team, but she's the rock star, 100% committed to the family and raising our kids. She studied child development in college. And she goes, Brett, I say, hey, if you want to go back to work, you can. I go, because these kids are a little bit crazy. You know, they have my blood in them. So I don't blame you. Let's just send them across the street to the, they can walk to school. You can go to work, all those things. And she goes, you know, I think I want to focus on the kids. And so we actually are homeschooling. We homeschool our kids. And her passion is child development. That's what she studied. And so we're doing that. And that also helps us to be more intentional about our values too, which is helpful.
That's awesome. So I have a few more questions for you, then we'll wrap it on up. But what truths do you hold today that you think may change in the next 10 years?
Truths that I hold today personally, mm-hmm, that will change in the next 10 years. Well, I hope none of my moral values or my beliefs would ever change. You know, I don't think those would change. I think, you know, with the way the world's going, with technology and with automation and with artificial intelligence and with commercial real estate in particular, we've seen the marketplace really change for residential with Redfin and Zillow and all of those things that are really challenging the real estate agent. I would say technology is going to continue to turn industries upside down. And I think that's kind of known. The question is, what will it be? I don't really know how to answer that question, but that's a great question. It got in my head kind of spinning a little bit there.
What's your greatest theory?
My greatest theory. Wow. I can't say it's my theory, but I would say one of them that I'm really focused on right now is what's called smart debt, risky debt, and dumb debt. And I think that smart debt goes into a marketplace that sees a discount. Maybe it's a buyer's market like commercial real estate was 5 years ago and like, you know, goes in and takes on debt and buys a big property. Risky debt holds on to that debt during the current cycle. Like things are high, like you probably should sell, right? Let's not wait till this thing shifts and then you're going to get hit. Dumb debt doubles down in a marketplace that's highly appreciated and to buys even more and then they get hit. So I would say, I don't really quite know that's my theory, but that's kind of the way I'm articulating it today, if that makes sense.
And we talked a bit about people and working with people. And I think one of the foundations of working with people is connection. So I'd love to learn about your philosophy on developing deep, meaningful, and genuine connection with another person.
Great question. I would say that first is a season of life, right? Seasons of life. We have different seasons. And the one thing I've learned in, especially growing up in high school, you have like the closest buddies, and even college, some of the closest buddies. But as things change, you have your career, and then you get married, and then you have kids, and each of those are different seasons. And to recognize that the connection with personal friends shifts naturally with marriage and with kids too. Even if you're married with kids, you end up having different friends in different seasons as well. Just the natural progression, and to be graceful and be understanding of that, and recognize and say that out loud. That has helped me with those connections. But of course, it's intentional time. It's caring for people. It's giving. You know, it's helping them out. It's empathizing with their pain. I mean, those are all things that you got to practice, right? And it kind of goes back to the quote that like integrity is never owned. It's only rented, and the rent's due every day. The same thing has to do with intimate relationship with your friends and family and your relationship with God. Like, it's never owned, right? It's only rented, and the rent is due every day. If you want a close, intimate relationship with somebody, even if you had it for 10 years, it's going to start to dwindle, you know, today. You know, gravity is going to pull it back down. And so we have to be intentional about our time, our energy, but it also means realizing that we're limited, right? It's probably hard to have 1,000 intimate relationships. It's more likely that you're going to have, you know, call it 20 to 50, right? Type of with our time and energy. So that would be my best answer for that.
So Brett, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing some time with me. I really do appreciate it. I just have one more question for you. And just for context of the question, I'm 24 years old. And this is a personal question, so that's what I want to ask. But what question should I be asking you that I just wouldn't think to ask?
Great question. Well, not knowing if you're married or not, or have kids or not, you know.
I'm not.
Yeah, and so the quote of learning to work harder on yourself than you do on your entrepreneurial, you know, business or your podcast or your investing, like your health, your finances, your spiritual walk, your relationship with your friends, you know, growing your character and leadership. So the question would be, are you practicing those things? Are you setting, you know, and you probably are setting goals, you know, but for all of those areas, right? Not just the one or two or three that are probably your strengths. You probably have a couple weaknesses on those other ones, but those are major areas of your life. So just make sure you're practicing it. And what does that mean? Of course, you're writing down your goals, but do you have mentors in your life who are a stage or two ahead of you in life, who are encouraging you and saying, hey, Ben, I've been there and I was where you're at, and here's a way to grow together. So whether that be a mastermind group, whether that be a spiritual Bible study group, whether that be just a mentor that's ahead of you, are you developing that relationship to help you along just by doing it yourself? So make sure you're asking yourself that question. And that's something too that I used to go every Wednesday morning, 6:30 with these guys. And I was like the number one attender for years. And then I got married and it was, you know, they call it every third one, and then kids. And so now it's like once a month. So again, seasons of life with those kind of things, but realize that that's super important to have those mentors that you're connected with.
Well, again, Brett, I want to thank you so, so much for coming on the show today. And to everybody who's watching and listening, I want to thank y'all very, very much. Y'all's time is very valuable too. So I'm very grateful that you choose to share it with us today. So thank you very much. I love y'all very, very much. And I will see you